folks, we are back on the FlagStick.com Tea Talk podcast here with my co-host Scott McLeod. Stefan Tiedorf here. How are you today, Scotty?
I'm trying to have more energy than you, but more energy than myself as it is right now. I think we both look like tired guys considering, you know, I think we're just beat down from the golf season. It's been a long year so far.
I mean, it's that, and like, it's 2021. Okay. Farmers do not need light. Did we talk about this on this podcast?
No, but
I hate daylight savings. I must have gone on a rant like a year or 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Each
I
year.
Hate it. It makes no sense. Like the original idea, you know, you probably grew up on a farm with no electricity or something back in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. that you needed light from the sun to do your job. Like, farmers don't need that anymore. Why are we still doing daylight savings time? It makes no sense. I hate it. Drives me nuts. Kids don't agree with it. Like, yeah. You try telling a newborn that, oh no, it's not time to get up. Like, each morning I've been getting up at like 6, which isn't that bad. I have friends that their kids get up at like 5, whatever, but like, and then just like rocking him to sleep for an hour so he can eventually get used to it. But does dad get more sleep? No.
Not
just gets more coffee and really tests out his heart. Yeah, that's why I'm tired. But why, give me your reason. You're probably working harder.
You know, it's weird. It's just, I think we're in that transition time where, you know, golf courses are starting to close down, but there's still lots of news and things that are happening. So for us locally, you know, we have, you know, golf pros changing positions, superintendents changing positions. We've got Q schools are back. There's still tour stuff going on. So, you know, there's stuff going on with, you know, be it amateur stuff and Team Canada. So it's just nonstop. I mean, despite the fact that, there's not local tournaments happening, there's lots of stuff going on. So I mean, you have to be on it all the time. And yeah, once it starts to be all over the world too, you know, there's no time zones, right?
Yeah, that's fair. I it is still weird to me. I don't know about you know, I feel like this the turn, like I know we had like its tournament in Mexico, but like when we're talking about like the PGA Tour season, the Houston Opens, like the field isn't great this week. I'm not gonna try to stuff it up by any means. When you have to throw what 13 sponsors exemptions at it, you know, you're not going to be, that's an exaggeration, but you know what I mean? You know, it's not gonna be great, but like, it does feel like the turn where, you know, this tournament has a little bit of, you know, history. And so I feel like we're getting there.
It's hard because the Houston, you know, where it was positioned before was close to the Masters, right? And now,
well, that's being, probably why. Yeah.
Yeah. Now it's stuck in November. And, you know, this was traditionally silly season before. And now we've got these full point events that count for, you know, 500 FedEx points and get you in the Masters. But, you know, frankly, there's a lot of players that are obviously taking some time off and you know, kind of sorting it out and going, okay, I want to play in this event. They're being strategic this time of year because, you know, they need some rest. They also need to test out new equipment for next year. They have other business stuff they need to do. If you look at the Canadians, be it Michael Gligic or Corey Connors, you know, it's baby time. So there's lots of family stuff that's going on too. Their kids are going back to school too. So yeah, just lots of different things. So this is why you see these fields just seem erratic all the time as well.
Yeah, it's not a lot of Canadians in the field this week, but we'll get to that. Let's just break down last week really quickly. As you heard last week, Scott and I've started a new long season long bet from now until the playoffs. That's it. We're going to end at the playoffs. We don't want to do the playoffs because there's too much going on there, and someone's going to pick whoever's going to win the winner, and then they win it all. So from now until the playoffs, we each pick a player. You can't pick them twice. Whoever has the most money at the end of the year, you know, always the other guy. A nice bottle of scotch or bottle of wine. We haven't decided, you know, I think Yeah, the winner can decide. Last week, I picked Shane Lowry, and Shane let me down. Shane let me down. I early on, I thought, hey, great pick. He started off well, you know, coming out early I'm trying to break it down. You know, he's 2 under at the start of his round. You know, a bunch of birdies, and then, yeah, it just fell apart. So whatever, I'm over it. So Shane Lowry missed the cut. He picks up $0, but you had Rick Fowler, who looked good early, and then
really 66 kinda in the first round and just didn't build on it at all. It actually backed up, unfortunately.
Yeah, just kind of fizzled out. T40. Nick Taylor beats him by one. Should have grabbed beat Nick, picked up Nick, sorry. But yeah, you're up 28,440. Big lead. Whoa. Big lead after 1 week.
That means absolutely nothing on the PGA Tour with the dollars that are out there these days. But you never know.
If that was the LPGA, I might not be able to catch up. That might be the
end. Which is terrible to have to think that way.
It really is. We're going to pick our players later for the Houston Open. But let's talk about the week that was, Scotty.
Yeah.
We have our birdies, we have our pars, we have our bogeys, and our honorable mentions. Scotty, what's your birdie for the week?
Yeah, my birdie for the week. I don't know if you saw the announcement today, but basically there was a DP World was involved with the European Tour, but they're taking on the title sponsorship role with the European Tour going into 2022. It was a pretty wide encompassing press release and happenings with this. It wasn't just one thing of, hey, we're we're involved with the tour more and we're going to name it that way. Big money coming into the tour. Going to see some bigger purses, big full schedule. There are some cool initiatives as well that trickle down to the smaller tours. And I think they were more significant because if you look at their challenge tour, which is obviously their development tour, much like the Korn Ferry Tour is for the PGA Tour, they have established a tour bursary in the name of John Jacobs, a longtime, you know, player and coach as well. And it's actually going to support the top five players off the challenge tour rankings at the end of the Rolex Challenge Tour Grand Final. And that's all supported by the RNA. And it basically what it's going to do is going to pay their travel and their expenses for the following year on the big tour, which I think is really, really cool. That, I mean, obviously those players are probably in a decent position, but you've got to think that, you know, if that was relative to the PGA Tour, if all of a sudden you're taking the top five players off the Korn Ferry Tour and you're covering all their expenses, and they didn't have to worry about their travel and expenses for the next year, that's a pretty big deal from a development side of it. Yeah. So I think that's that was kind of the nugget that I saw in the announcement. I mean, it's great that there's going to be, you know, a couple $100 million and obviously raised purses and they've obviously got the affiliation now with the European Tour. They're going to have some co-sanctioned events with the PGA Tour. But I thought that nugget itself was birdie worthy.
Yeah, I Twitter had a heyday today with the DP World Tour.
Yeah, of course.
I was giggling like a little boy I am at times. A lot of great tweets. Ryan French gave a shout out to
Jenna Jameson,
famous actress of her day. Yeah, it was gold. It was comedy gold. But at the end of the day, when you actually break it down, there's some great stuff happening here. You know, $200 million purse is great. The European Tour, you know, it's a livable. It's a good living on the European Tour. It's obviously unlike the Korn Ferry Tour, where it's a tough living, and the top players, you know, make a living, and the bottom players don't. Like, you can make a living on the European Tour, good living, middle of the pack, you know, even end of the pack. I'm sure there's guys out there. Travel is a lot cheaper and sometimes out on the European Tour, sometimes not, but most of the time it is if you're out there. So this is good. Anything to give more options to players, and you know, it's a tour that you get to watch more of, right?
Yeah.
You don't get the Korn Ferry Tour at 6 a.m. on a Sunday in the middle of December. You do get the European Tour, and that's where you might see guys try to do that Brooks Koepka path a little bit more. If there's that more money out there, why not do it out there? It's definitely a birdie. I can agree with that. For me, my birdie for the week goes to our former guest, Mark Ong-Yuano, locks up full status on the Korn Ferry Tour, finished T29, guarantees himself 8 starts next year. Bunch of other guys in the field, you know, they're going to get starts. There's no guarantee of how many or what. Like, obviously Albin Choi, a tough final round to finish up Q school, not guaranteed too much, but hey, if he has asked Albin this a year ago when he hadn't started caddying for Sung J-M, or I guess more probably a year and a half ago, if, hey, you know, don't worry, and at the end of 2021 you're gonna have status on the Korn Ferry Tour, you're gonna have a bunch of money back in your bank, you're no longer in debt after, you know, a year caddy, like, he would have signed off on it. And he seems like a guy that has the right mindset a lot of the times, especially for what he's gone through. But unfortunate finish, but you know, happy to see a guy like Mark lock up that that status for next year.
Yeah, it's good for Mark. I mean, like you said, he gets those eight starts. There's a few other guys that are in that category. And, you know, it gives him the opportunity to basically, you know, to make some money to change their fate in the reshuffle, which makes it more difficult for guys like Albin. I looked it up based on the placing where he's at relative to the tour. You know, he might get guarantee a couple of starts out of that, but it's a matter of what they do with them. And then as well of having that status, they're eligible to go in the, you know, the Monday qualifiers. They can get access to that. They don't have to pre-qualify. There's a lot of things that come with having status.
Do you have to on pay, the tour? Though? That's my question. You
yeah, they do. Tier. They do,
you but still
it's just,
do, but
it's just a member rate. It's a reduced amount. Yeah. But I mean, the thing is too, though, you know, being part of the PGA Tour family, we mentioned on the show before, it's important for a number of things. It's that access to the TPC courses. It's, you know, they're part of that family. Some it's, no, you, it's only for, yeah, courses that really limit them, yes, as far as TPC Sawgrass and whatever. But there are definitely advantages, you know, to having that membership card. They have other perks and programs and stuff as well with things like rental cars and preferred rates and hotels and all those things. Every single one of those things matters. So despite the fact that you're not guaranteed starts, you're at least have status with the tours, and that certainly can be helpful.
100%. So shout out to those guys and look forward to that. I think what you highlighted though is nobody's given up starts, especially at the start of the year. Nobody's missing. And on the Corn Ferry Tour, it's rare for guys to take a week off, unless you're, you know, a guy like Taylor Penrith last year who locks it up, or Steven Yeager, yeah, who locks those things up early. Like, you're not giving up starts.
No, and it used to be
very difficult.
Yeah, it used to be weird that way because the tour, well, I mean, now obviously where the tour starts, and normally, you know, they'll start in South America or whatever, but, you know, they used to start in Australasia. And it was always interesting to see if players would give up those starts at the start of the year because it was so expensive to go over and play some of those events. So sometimes guys wouldn't do it and other players would jump in and sneak in. Has happened the same as well with South America. You know, not everybody's comfortable jumping down to Colombia to play events or whatever, but, you know, you do what you have to do as far as if you want to be on that tour. Yeah, you're going to jump in and get those starts, especially if they say your number's up and you can get in, because somebody else is going to climb over your cold body in no time for sure.
Oh yeah, the phone calls aren't being missed, that's for sure.
No,
let's jump. Let's go birdie to bogey this week. Then we'll hit par. Let's mix it up. What's your bogey for the week?
My bogey for the week is, again, and I've talked about this before, but top 100 lists. I mean, we get lists and stuff that are coming up all the time. We had another one that came out. It was Golf Magazine's top 100 list. And I'm not giving a bogey because of the list itself. What I'm getting a bogey is that another writer that we know, Robert Thompson, kind of pointed out something in talking about Trump Scotland and the fact that for first three times it was on the list, it was 47, 48, and 50th on the top 100 list. And then it's unfortunately, it's a great golf course, but it's owned by Donald Trump. Once Donald Trump became the president, it all of a sudden dropped out of the top 100. But meanwhile, these lists are supposed to be valid and based only on the golf courses and so forth. So I'm not advocating for that golf course. It is a fantastic golf course, or that owner. I'm advocating a bogey for the fact that, well, you know what? If these lists are supposed to be that legitimate, stuff like that shouldn't be happening, right? And because it does, I mean, it just shows you what happens with these lists, is that it's really comes down to the whims of the raters. And while they might get some things right in identifying that a golf course is good, where it's ranked generally, you know, it's basically a, you know, you're just throwing in a hat and pulling it out in a lot of cases.
See, this is why you're one of the best in golf media, is these little details like this, where somebody probably wouldn't even think of it, or they'd even go as far as like, I don't like Trump, so I'm not even going to highlight this as a negative thing. And I love that you're, you know, like I've spoken on this podcast my thoughts of Donald Trump and
for sure,
how he was as president. I'm not a fan of him by any stretch of the imagination, but if the list, as you mentioned, is supposed to be an unbiased list, then make it an unbiased list. The fact it's like, what happened? Did the course all of a sudden redesign complete? Did they suddenly tee off on the greens and now you're putting on the on the tee box, because it's the only way a course goes from being 50th to outside the top 100.
Yeah, and I would and I would have to check too. You know, with some of his other properties that would be highly ranked, it might not have
as interesting.
It might not have as big of impact on Turnberry, but I guess it would, because I know people that, you know, said they wouldn't go there after his ownership was there. My beef here is the fact that, you know, so many people hold these lists up as some sort of standard that the rankings properly, you know, the rankings themselves are somehow, you know, some gold standard. Obviously, they're not. And this is just another way that they're exposed.
I agree. Love that take. Great take. My bogey for the week is, I don't know if you saw this.
Oh, yeah.
There was this debate about if fittings should be free. And I believe, to give the credit to the podcast, I believe it came up on the No Putts Given
podcast. Yeah, so it originally started on a tweet that My Golf Spy did. And then what happened was TXG kind of did a little, you know, clap back, which our good buddy Ryan Barath was involved with that. Mm-hmm. And then what happened was then they invited him in on the No Putts Given podcast to have a debate with Adam Beach, who's the owner of My Golf Spy. So that's the background to it.
Nice. Again, why you're one of the best in the biz. Nothing gets missed by Scotty McLeod. So the take is, you know, should fittings be free? And I'm giving it a bogey that it absolutely should not be free. When I was actually doing fittings were free. If you were buying the clubs, they're free, right? And I put a lot of time into my craft. You don't become the club fitter of the year in 2014 without actually working hard on that. Just want to point that out. Have a drink. And then, but
that's how the game works, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Played that one in a while.
The point I'm trying to get at is, like, if someone works that hard on something, pay them for their work. If it's going to make you better by you getting the right shaft, the right grip, the right head, everything, you know, pay that person for the work.
I will give you some extra context to this as well. And this might make you even more interested about this. We might want to bring on Ryan and even talk about it. Adam tried to portray his or try to frame his discussion about this is that free fittings would be better for the growth of the game. And that more people would get fitted if they could get it done for free.
No, I can confirm that's not the case, because it didn't happen. We actually started having less fittings.
Yeah.
And he
did the same thing. He actually said he had a business where he used to do fittings and charge, and then he didn't charge. Well, then he didn't have that business. So I don't know where he's trying to go with that. And I listened to the whole debate. I listened to the whole YouTube video, and then I saw, you know, Ian's response as well. And they had some response on TXG and whatever, but I'm right exactly where you're going, and keep on that. And you can tell your experience. And
like, and, you and I have seen how, like, realistically, you know, you've got, you know, times whatever, but like, let's say I've seen a million golf shots, and it's not that many, but whatever it is, right?
Yeah,
like after 10 minutes of seeing somebody hit golf shots once they're warmed up, I, without giving them any other clubs and having them hit them, I could probably fit them relatively accurately,
sure,
right then and there on the spot. Yeah. That I won't charge you for. But what I will charge you for is if I got my launch monitor right there.
When you have to dig into the weeds, right?
And now I'm doing, I'm looking at all the spin data to get the proper spin data, the proper launch data, the proper gapping, right? Like when you even get further, like all this, it's an hour minimum of work to do a good club fitting. And we're not even talking about the putter in there.
Oh, at least, yeah.
On top of that, pay people for that. I mean, it's just a bad take. It's bogey. I'm lost for words. I don't know how you're going to come up with a good argument. There's no way it grew the game. We used to do free fittings. We weren't players weren't playing more, you know, fittings cost money now, and golf is at its all time peak. Yeah. Pandemic came in to play with that, but people are paying for fittings. They're playing better clubs.
I mean, here's the thing. Are people going to trust that when they get that for free? If you think about that, and another analogy they made use of, and Ian did a great one, it's like, okay, well, you know, here's the deal. And obviously we're not saying this is the same, but you know, if all of a sudden you're you've been charged with something and you need to get a lawyer, are you going to get the lawyer that's going to do it for free? Unless you win, or are you going to pay for the one that's going to, you know, take care of you and make sure that you're going to get closer to being, you know, scot-free on whatever you've done or whatever the case may be. I mean, there's a million ways that you can address this. And, you know, the fact that that it's free, I don't know necessarily people are going to go, oh, a free fitting. The value that they're going to put on that is pretty little. There's a big difference between calling something a fitting and versus just, you know, a few minutes of advice. I mean, I do that all the time. People will message about stuff and here's this, here's that, you know, that's a general recommendation. That is not a fitting. So even defining that as a fitting is not even close. What actually happens is just what you talked about. You know, you can get the general information there. You can get somebody into something fairly quickly, but if you're going to dive in and use the wealth of knowledge and the depth of knowledge that you've had to develop as a fitter, there's value to that. And unfortunately, you know what? You need to charge for that.
Yeah, I agree. I think the other thing is people might, if you're thinking they should be free, you must not have had the true experience
right.
of a fitting. Yeah. And that means you probably had a bad fitting. So therefore, you know, I get where your head is at. Maybe that should be free. But if you have a good fitting, you know what it's like. Go to somebody that is advertising they're charging for it, not just free, because then you get what you pay for in the end. Let's leave it at that. What's your par for the week, Scotty?
My par for the week, again, par is always a hard one, but I noticed this pointed out by the tour this today, actually, that players from outside the United States have won on the PGA Tour the last 5 weeks in a row, which is 1 week shy of the longest streak since 1960 to now. And while it's an interesting fact and a tidbit, I don't find it all that remarkable, because really that's where golf has gone. It's a world game now. You just have to look at the leaderboard on the tour, and you know, whether players are European Tour players and they're based in Europe, or most of them are living in the States now anyways, that's kind of the expectation. So I don't see it as a shocking thing. And the only thing that would be shocking is the fact that it hasn't happened more than anything. So I just thought it was an interesting note by the tour, but you know, it's a par because it's like, well, yeah, I sort of expect that. So, you know, and those five in a row would be Im, McIlroy, Matsuyama, Herbert, and or Hubert, and Hovland.
How did we sleep on Hovland last week? He won this tournament last year.
Yeah.
He's so good. Like, I feel like we never talk about him, you and I. Like, we never pick him in anything. He just kind of goes under the radar. And I want your take. So I had a buddy that sent me a swing, and I have a buddy that, unless the swing is like Adam Scott, he thinks it's ugly.
Oh,
and he sent me Victor Hovland's swing, and he described it as violent. It just looks violent to him. You know, when you look at that swing, if you had to describe it in one word, is violent the word? Like, how would you describe that?
I would call it dynamic. I mean, he does a lot of things that are intuitive to him, and they're built around his game to get the result that he wants. Yeah. And I think that is his swing is more what people should be thinking about when they're building a swing. Their swing needs to be theirs. It doesn't need to be Adam Scott's, because that's not necessarily going to work for you. I mean, you could take Adam Scott's swing and try to give it to someone else, and it's not necessarily going to work. I mean, unless they go from zero to that, of course. I would say it's just dynamic, athletic, and functional. Those are the big things for sure.
Yeah, I do understand what he means by, because he's putting his effort into that swing. But I think what makes it him is that it's very feel. You can tell he designed it by his feel. Like, this backswing is not perfect, his downswing is not but it works for him. You know, no teacher is going to teach, hey, when you actually want to hit a draw instead of a cut, pause at the top of your backswing, re-hitch, and then you'll feel like you're coming inside a little bit more. I love Victor. I think he's like, I don't know why they're not doing more with him. The video Scratch posted of all his like post interviews, his interview after this round, which awesome. Is awkward and hilarious. And he's just laughing afterwards. It's like, he just seems like a guy that's like, how did I get here? But I'm loving being here all at the same time. So
well said.
I like that. My par for the week, if anybody notices, the border has opened between Canada and the U.S. From the U.S. side, it was open from the American side. You can come into Canada. Now Canadians can drive across the border. Tough timing on that with the golf season ending, but hey, winter's coming up. It could be pretty awesome to do a trip. So like, I find that like a good thing. The border's opening, but like, the reason I give it a par is it's just a lot of work.
Yeah.
Like, so to get back into Canada, you need to have a test within 72 hours. You don't need that to get into the States, right? Like, tests in the States can be anywhere from $150 to $300. You got to tack all of that on when you're looking to go anywhere. And to go, say, Carolina from where we are, and you're driving down, say, 12 hours, you can't really do the test here beforehand. So now a trip that looks like it would be, say, $300 for three nights and three rounds of golf, now it's double, just so you get something shoved up to your brain and to say, you know, whether you had a positive or negative test. It's, I get changes will happen. You know, I'm sure they'll revisit it as we go on here, but it seems like a lot of work. Is it worth it? I don't know, but it's a positive. It's a step in the right direction. You can go see your Buffalo Bills play and come back and all in the same day and get your test prior, but like, to do anything more than say a day trip, it's becomes very difficult. So hopefully that changes. It's just a par. I get why they're doing it, but
yeah, I think it's the mid-range trips that are the effort. I mean, like you said, you can go across for that day trip, and obviously for anybody that's going to go away for a significant amount of time. I happened to play some golf with a couple of guys the other day who were, you know, they're going to be heading down for, you know, 2 months or whatever. And yeah, fine. No, it's no big deal. But it's the one where you're going to go for that 1 week trip, where all of a sudden it puts you into that threshold where it's like, oh boy, you know, now, as you said, oh, this is a good deal. And there's lots of good deals that are happening. I mean, places like Myrtle Beach are putting on specials for Canadians and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they almost have to factor in a testing price into the deals and package it in there to make some of those things happen, which, you know, I'm surprised I haven't seen one of those yet.
Well, that's what I'm wondering is, we have to, we were thinking about doing that, going down for a couple of weeks. Now I come back, my wife, my son and I, like, am I getting my, you know, at that point, 10-month-old kid, does he have to have a test to get across the border?
Right,
probably. Yeah, like, there's so much work. That's $900. If we think about it's crazy. So hopefully that changes at some point. But if not, I get why it's there. You know, I don't want to sound, you know, entitled. It's to protect everybody just, else around us. It makes sense, but you know, the cost and like, it sounds bad, but like, I had a buddy that went to a place near the border, and they knew like the cost for those tests, where they can charge whatever. It's the private, you know, medical industry down there. So I'm not going to get too far into it. Let's leave it there. Yeah. Why you hate your honorable mention for the week, Scotty?
Yeah, my honorable mention is for Matt Robinson, who is the outgoing golf professional at Rideau View Golf Club in Ottawa, Canada. He and his wife, they've been doing a fundraiser, a longest day of golf fundraiser, since 2008, and basically they raise money for the Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario, which they unfortunately had to make a fair bit of use from when they their twins were born. And they were very grateful for the services that were provided there, and it's a wonderful hospital. And Matt decided years ago that he was going to start raising money and giving it back to CHEO so that they could support some of the things that supported them. And he was very fortunate working as a golf professional, and he was the assistant professional and associate professional there. He found a backing donor who would match every year. He would match up to $25,000 every year. And basically what Matt would do is he'd just do a coaching marathon. And, you know, obviously people would come in, pay for the lessons, but of course people would give extra money. And this year they raised $40,583. And they've now raised over $585,000 since 2008. And they work with CHEO to make sure the money goes in the right places for particular pieces of equipment and things like that. And it's something he didn't have to do. And for he and his wife, Dana, you know, they worked hard to do this. And it's certainly appreciated and respected by a lot of people. He definitely has been recognized for this. But, you know, he doesn't ask for anything for this. He just basically does it. Announces the amount and tells where it's going to go. And that's about it. It's not for anything else except for the fact of he's just there to raise money. And I think it's incredible that he would, you know, make that effort every single year to do that.
Yeah, it's awesome. Can't add anything else.
No,
It's just awesome. My last honorable mention is goes to Lydia Ko. Picks up her 22nd professional win. Lydia Ko is still only what, 24? like
she, I think, Brooke Henderson, same age.
Yeah, people have forgotten about Lydia Ko, and for a while, I think I've said this, like, that was the face of the LPGA for a good stretch from what, 2013 to,
well, when she was winning at 16, 15, like, and 15 and 16 on the LPGA, she's winning the Canadian Open. So yes. Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. It's a decade now that she's been that face.
Two wins this year, you know, one on the ladies European tour, and now on and one on the LPGA. I'm expecting a big year. Watch out. You know, I think she's in a good place. Don't have too much more. Obviously didn't get to watch the Saudi Ladies International, but you know, Lydia Ko, watch out. Player, you know, 21 to 24 is where she had that gap where she really didn't win. You know, that's a big growing year for people. So maybe she was a little busy on other things in life.
She had some coaching changes. She had some things that she was going to do. She was doing then. She was making a transition. She was kind of searching around. And, you know, we've said it on the podcast here before. She's done a lot of work with Sean Foley. That's who she's been working with, and done great work with him. Did some putting work in the past with Gareth Rafleski, the Irish Canadian, and obviously, you know, I use her swing as a model all the time. I mean, I pull it out whether it's male or female. Just some of the examples that I've got from Sean's, from some of the video that he's captured, just showing people certain things in her golf swing, and it's certainly one for a lot of people to model themselves after a little bit.
Yeah, I would take that. I think it's a swing I would take. Which, speaking of which, easy transition into, we started the rebuild. We haven't really done too much in the actual side of things. Of,
I call it the Stefan project.
The Stefan project. The Haney project. Was that what it was called?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. So went through the TrackMan combine. That's tough. I think, you know, you hear 60 shots, you're like, okay, I won't take long, bang, 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 bang. No, that was tired after 60 shots. I mean, you don't take 60 shots in what, you know, 40 minutes or whatever it was, probably quicker than most people would.
It's basically a round of golf, pretty much, as far as, you know, more than a round of golf as far as full shots, hopefully, depending on the level of your play.
Yeah.
In, you're doing in pretty much an hour time versus, you know, 4.5 hours or 3.5 or whatever you're going to play your round of golf in.
Exactly. So, Scotty, we're early in. What's your thought process from here? We've started, you know, we talked about some weight shifting properly after, but, you know, what's your head? Where's your headspace at? Have you taken on more than you can chew?
No, not at all. And I never think of it that way. I always think of it, you know, everybody's golf game and golf swing is a puzzle for sure. What I would say is just, you know, as you said, we're in the assessment process. We're really in the, you know, basically using the TrackMan combine to have a look at dispersion, your ability to hit certain distances. It gives us a good amount of data to look at that I can sit and interpret and determine where your weaknesses, where your strength as far as ball strike is concerned. Obviously,
been spending a lot of time looking at it, trying to find that strength.
Well, you know, everybody does have one. You know, they have yardages that they're comfortable with. And now what we need to do is we need to extend that assessment process. We'll look at chipping, pitching, short game stuff. We'll dig into your putting. We just really need a baseline to work from. And we saw that right away. When we looked at the combine process and you got done, it basically spit back a handicap that was almost exactly yours. Mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty intuitive as far as your ability and recognizing that. But again, it's deciding, you know, what are the weak parts? What are the strengths? What are your abilities to do certain things in your golf game? And then we can target those certain things because, you know, it's like anything else. If you don't have good data, you can't make good decisions. So now really, as you said, we mentioned a couple things that you're kind of going to work on a little bit, some real basics, but now we'll really start to dig in once we finish the rest of the assessment process and also have a look too of, you know, physically as well, what you can do and what you can't do. I'm not going to obviously ask you to do something physically that you can't do, but we have to look at that as far as your biomechanics and what your body's capable of doing, and see how that's going to affect what we're going to do as far as shaping your actual mechanics of your golf swing.
Yeah, I think I said to you when we were doing it, if there was a pitch and putt tour, I might be leading it.
You were killer from 80 to 100 yards.
80 to 100.
Yeah, you were tour level right there.
Tour level. I'm going to claim it right there. Tour level. I was hitting some darts once I dialed them in. I also don't have my clubs yet. Still waiting on my new.
Yeah.
Hey, that's why you pay for fittings. I have my T100S coming from Titleist. Still waiting on those. I believe the Mizunos I have, way the lofts work.
No,
because I hit a 9-iron shorter than a wedge sometime. Like, and then like it was just they're wacky. I was playing with them on the weekend after. Still same thing. There's like a little wacky, but it's fun. I'm looking forward to step two. And hey, already I felt like I was striking the ball better in my final 9 holes for the year. So we're
how
on.
How much
our
more
way.
Golf are you gonna play?
I don't see how I'll ever get out again. Pretty much every course in this area is
during daylight savings time.
Daylight savings time. Like, you know, what's that? You have like, there's like a, they're realistically for 18 holes. There's what, a 2-hour window that you have to book within, maybe a 3-hour.
Yeah. Cause frost, you know,
frost. Yeah. Everything. It pretty much makes it impossible. So we shall see. I'm more focused on just, you know, anytime I got the chance to get over there and get working on the game, doing that instead. So step one complete. We'll send some updates. Scott was nice enough not to post any videos this time around.
I posted a still photo. That was about it.
One-handed draw, baby.
One-handed draw.
Now it's done. All right, Scotty, it's the Houston Open this week. I mentioned that off the top. It's actually the Hewlett-Packard Houston Open this week. HP, congratulations. Enterprise.
It was the Vivant last year.
Yeah, one of those tournaments that just has a different name every
season. Easier to call it the Houston Open.
Yeah, we'll just call it the Houston Open. So as we mentioned, we're going to each pick one player. Once you pick them, you can't pick them again. Who went first last week? I think I went first. So you get first pick this week, Scotty.
Yeah, so you know what? I was kind of having a look through at, you know, kind of last year here. I didn't want to get too crazy, but I think the biggest thing is trying to use up names that are not the big ones early and maybe get them while they're hot.
That's what I was thinking too. You can't take the big guys. Like,
no,
you don't want to waste the Brooks Koepka this week when you know he's going to be like a top 10 at the US Open.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously I tried to do that strategy a little bit with Fowler and the fact that, you know, he played well kind of the week before. So I am going to choose a player that played well in the last little while and also played well previously in Houston. I'm going to take Aaron Wise.
Wow. Okay. I didn't think you were going to. Aaron Wise has been on fire, for the record. That is a good pick. That's not who I was thinking. I had a thought that you're going to take my guy. We had the same thought process. We weren't talking about it coming in at all.
You're going to take Carlos Ortiz?
I am going to take Carlos Ortiz. Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am. I'm taking Carlos Ortiz.
Oh, what? Well, you know, he withdrew this morning because of
what?
His injury.
Oh, no. I didn't see that at all.
He actually issued a statement that he actually was having trouble with his shoulder.
He does not need to release a statement. Carlos Ortiz.
Oh, my God. Well, he's the defending champion. Of course.
That's why I wanted him.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So he actually released a statement and obviously was disappointed that he couldn't go. Basically said, due to a left shoulder injury, he will not be able to play. Unfortunately, I've been battling a left shoulder injury since Japan. After meeting with my doctors this morning, it was recommended that I take the rest of the season off to recover, Ortiz said. It's incredibly disappointing to me as I was looking forward to defending my first PGA Tour title in Texas, my second home. I'm honored to be a champion of this event, and I look forward to returning next year when Stefan can pick me then. That was exactly what he said.
That is devastating.
Oh, no.
I have to do some research. Like, I actually did research on this earlier today, thought about it. Clearly not the right research because I didn't check out, is this guy actually in the field research?
Well, but I tell you what, even the PGA Tour previews had him in the field, had him in the power rankings, and then they had to put, you know, editor's notes in there as well.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with Cameron Tringali, however you say his name. I'm struggling with last names. So last couple of weeks, I haven't been able to say names.
We have to get you the pronunciation guy, the PGA Tour pronunciation.
Yeah, I need a guy like I can push a button and it says, am I a producer? Am I here? Tringali has finished T29 last year at this tournament. The year before that, T13. I believe he's top 20 right now in the FedEx Cup, which is 11th. There you go. He's 11th in the FedEx Cup, early, obviously, in this season. So he's my guy. I don't see me picking him later in the year, but I believe he's still winless in his career.
He has
made a ton of money.
Yeah, he has. I think
he's in the field. Yeah. Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah. Can't win if you're not in the field.
Yeah. $15 million. Wow. Maybe we got to go back to, you
did a crazy
game a while back where it was,
how much have they won?
And that was, $15 million. I wouldn't have guessed this guy's, he's got 12 straight years on the PGA Tour,
which is pretty damn impressive. I mean, I had a guy talking to me yesterday when I was playing nine holes and we were talking about, you know, Ryan Palmer and how long he'd stayed out there and, you know, how impressive that was. And the same for Tringali, the fact that he's kept his card, not drop below and put himself in any particular categories that have put himself in jeopardy, made a quality living. And chances are he can walk down a street anywhere and nobody's going to know who he is.
Never. 1 year he finished outside the top 150. And only one other year outside of the 125. So
that's impressive.
Yeah, guy's a player and he's got hairy arms and I'm going to pick him for the week. All right, Scotty, what else is going on this week?
The European Tour is over in Dubai. Aaron Cockerell, past guest on the show, has made it into the field for the Aviv Dubai, which is great. That's leading into their championship there. The Charles Schwab Cup is on. Unfortunately for the PGA Tour champions, there's only four players that can actually win that title, but is the culmination of 20 and 21. So if you look at players like our Canadians, Mike Weir is eighth in the points going in. He's actually had 12 top 10s and a win in that 2021 period. Stephen Ames has had a win and eight top 10s as well, and he's 22nd on that list going in. So at least they're in there. They're in there for the money, but you know it's tough to beat the guys like Langer and Jimenez and those guys because they're just too far up there and they've won too much money.
At what point is Bernhard, is he done? He's 64.
I don't know. He keeps winning.
Why would you
stop?
No, I know, but like at what point do the wheels fall off? Like he made $3 million, like 38 events this year, 20, like that's cost 2 years, right? Like,
yeah,
24. He's playing full schedule still. Like
he's had 118 professional wins.
That's insane. That is insane. He has 42 on the PGA Tour champions.
I know.
He's got how
that
many
he, that he's only been eligible for 14 years.
He only has three on the PGA Tour, obviously one being a pretty good one.
Two of them there. One, two of those.
Yeah, my bad. That like it's just like when do the wheels fall off? He's 64. Like that. I'm speechless. You're not giving me anything on your end. So I guess we can move on. I mean, Jim Furyk makes sense to be in there. What is Jim? 52, 50, 51, right? Jimenez is still like, he's probably mid 50s at this point. And Ernie, these are the guys that should be there. The guys that are in their early 50s, the 64 year old. What I guess here's my over under. His final win.
Yep.
Comes over or under 68 and a half.
Oh, after. Oh, yeah. It happens.
You think
after.
He's getting one in the 70s?
I think he's the guy who's enjoying life. It's just fun for him. Even if he's only playing a partial schedule, he'll still grind out a win. He's still the guy who's got the capability, who does not look at age as a barrier. He just knows it's my golf club matches up to a golf ball. It does not know how old I am. And I mean, look at the play he's had even in some of the majors and contending even in the Masters the last number of years. I mean, he does not think of his age as being a barrier. I mean, he's just a golfer. That's how he thinks about it. So, you know, in looking at those events on that tour and the length of those courses and his ability to score, and, you know, he's done everything as far as his putting is concerned over the years. And, you know, somehow he's managed to adapt and still get wins. So I think he's a guy that, you know, we could see win past the age of 70 on the PGA Tour champions.
That's crazy. All right. Well, let's move on. Let's hit the mailbag for the week, Scotty.
Sure, let's get to it. All right, we got a bunch this week. Thanks, everybody, for sending those in. Kind of some interesting ones. Whether we have good answers or not, we'll see. We'll find out. But, hey, that's the challenge every week. First one is from a longtime listener. It says, is it illegal to hover your driver instead of grounding it at address? I am sure this has got to be something. This is one of those buddy conversations where, you know, dude's in your group and says, hey, you're not allowed to do that. You've got to ground your club. And he's obviously looking to us for a definitive answer so he can, you know, get back of his buddies. Do you want to break the news to him?
Yeah. Why don't you Google Matt Kuchar and then you'll get your answer. Actually,
or like, Nicholas.
Or Nick. Like, there's a lot. Ricky Fowler, he actually hovers his driver. A lot of guys do because they don't want to get that stuck feeling. Gligic actually does the same thing. Like, I can go through a ton of people. So, no, it's not illegal. You're good to go.
You're right. Yeah, you can do either. It's all good. Who is the best golfer among NHL players right now? Any idea?
Ooh. There's like a lot of good ones, like former players that we know, that are sticks. My understanding though, on the Toronto Maple Leafs, Jake Muzzin is a player.
Oh,
he
really?
Has in his backyard, like he has this hill in his backyard. So you can see it in that Amazon, you know,
whatever. Oh yeah. Yeah. On the Leafs there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and he just chips down to this hill with a putting green at the bottom of it. So my understanding is he's really good. James Wisniewski apparently is good buddies with Jason Day. He, and apparently
I know a lot of guys that love the game. It's a matter of whether they're good or not at it.
Now James Wisniewski doesn't still play. Hockey that is, but I guess when he was playing hockey, there was times where he actually beat Jason Day straight up. So there's some guys out there that can play. There's also some guys that love it that can't really play. If I think you can go on, you know, Spittin' Chicklets does their little ones, the golf rounds where they play with, you know, current NHL players, and they're never usually that great as players. I guess Sagan's not bad. There's some good players, but not
to that level. Yeah, I think as far as active players, probably the guy I would point to that if people are not aware would be Drake Batherson from Ottawa. He actually, I know he won several club championships at Kenwo in Nova Scotia and was a contender in a lot of amateur and junior provincial tournaments in the Atlantic Canada. And I know he loves golf, and he actually had considered at one point pursuing golf in college versus hockey, which obviously, you know, he's done okay so far as hockey.
And there's guaranteed paychecks in hockey.
Yeah, exactly. and he's a guy actually I follow fairly actively and had gone back and forth with him. I'd love to get him on the pod sometime because he's that passionate about the game. So he's definitely a player that I know has that. As far as retired guys, you know, we've talked about Alfie before. I know he's right into it. Lots of other ones. Obviously, we had Savvy on here. Tons of guys that are now retired have the time, the ability to get out there and play as much. But as far as active players, that's a different story for sure. These guys have obviously got to shut down their seasons. You know, they can play for a little while and then boom, it's the camp and it's train. And it's, you know, no different than Garrett Rank, the NHL referee, who's, you know, one of the top amateurs in Canada. And, you know, he plays up until he has to go and do NHL games and referee. But, you know, he's regularly contending in elite world-class amateur tournament. So those are the ones kind of off the top of the head. I'm sure if we dig into it, we could probably find a bunch more. And I would say it's a sport that definitely goes hand in hand with hockey for sure.
I like it.
All right, on to the next one. How many gloves would the average golf pro have in their bag? I see them giving them away after they hit people. So I assume more than one or two.
Yeah. I think it's kind of like, I don't know about you. I usually have like almost three old ones just hanging around, and then I have like two or three in the bag that are brand new that just, you know, come out when I'm ready. The people I've caddied for, they get like seven gloves a week.
Week, yeah.
Like a week. So there's a new glove for each day. probably keep at least an extra one in the bag. Some guys might have a bunch. You never know. They don't weigh anything. So like the caddy's not going to get mad if you have seven gloves in there, but there's always at least one or two. And I have seen, you know, on a hot day, let's get the other new one out and just toss it in. And that's when I'm always switching. Hot day, like I go through three gloves in a day, easily switch every six holes.
Yeah, I can remember. I remember caddying for players with, you know, multiple gloves inside the umbrella up over top of you because it's wet and, you know, drying them out or whatever. And it varies by the player too. I mean, some players are very, you know, they're superstitious. They'll stick with a glove for a while. Maybe they played well and they'll keep it in there. There's other players who just want a new glove kind of every day, and they like that feel. And that would obviously be more the PGA Tour and not further down. But I would say the average is probably 3 to 4. They're not expecting to hit people and hand out gloves for sure. But if there's any level of moisture or anything going on or humidity or whatever, probably 3 to 4 at least.
Which one are you? Would you rather a brand new glove out of the bag every single shot or
every shot?
Every shot, every single shot, you got to take a brand new one on, put it on, and that's it. Or for the rest, for the rest of your career, or the rest of it, it's always in the same condition. So it's kind of hard to explain this analogy. But that glove that's like probably should be thrown in the garbage. There's like one hole in it. It's still kind of crunchy. You know, like it's not great, but it is usable. And it's like, hey, I've been playing good rounds. Which one are you on? Are you on the every shot brand new, or are you on the side of like the one that's been used and loved?
I'd be the every shot. I mean, it's too important as far as, you know, how that club moves in your hand and twists and so forth. So, you know what, if I can get a fresh glove on my hand, I definitely do what I can. And it's expensive. It could add up a lot with the price of gloves these days if you're doing every shot, for sure.
$20 a shot, basically.
Yeah. But I would be more that side. I see it. You know, I keep a glove in the sim when I'm just hitting balls, and it's the same glove, and I'll replace that after a few months or whatever. But you know, I'm the same. I keep a couple of gloves in there for practice, you know, just hitting balls in the range or whatever. But if I get a fresher glove, I definitely like a fresher glove for sure.
All right, we're aligned there.
All right. On to the next one here. What PGA course would you like to play the most?
Okay. Let's make this interesting, because it's so easy to go and be like, oh, Augusta.
Yeah.
Hey, let's cut Augusta.
Throw it out.
Let's cut Pebble out. Those type of ones, like outside of the ones that like everybody really knows. Right. Like everyone knows Pebble.
Yeah.
Right? Everyone knows Augusta. I don't know if there's any other one really on the PGA Tour that's like
Harbor Town. Everybody sort of knows.
Yeah. What my answer is the Grand Reserve Country Club. No, I'm just kidding. my answer is actually Riviera.
That's amazing.
I want that walk up 18. I want to hit that shot into 10.
You don't want the run up one from down in the fairway when you've left your caddy bib behind.
No, you don't want that. I think Riviera, it looks sweet. It's also like, you know, I'm not big about like country clubs and this super fancy, but that's one of those places that if you get an invite there, like you hop on a flight, you go, right? Like you're not really getting an invite to Riviera that often. So have you ever played it?
A Riviera? No, I've walked it, but that's about it. And it's amazing. I mean, I know it'd be one I definitely want to play. And, you know, I'm not going to double up and do the one that, you know, you say, but just walking it there, it's a special place for sure. I'm going to dig through here.
Let's say you can't take Sawgrass. Like, wow. I think Sawgrass would be fun, right?
Yeah,
like
Sawgrass I played.
Yeah. Like Bay Hill, like, you know, like everyone knows those ones. So like, give me something that people wouldn't.
I would look at, let me look here. Well, I mean, they're going to know Colonial, you know, they're going to know Muirfield Village. So trying to pick out something that,
I mean, those are better. Like the average fan isn't going to know a lot of those, but just say TPC Louisiana and we'll move on. It's fine.
It is not TPC Louisiana. That's for sure. I would probably say Detroit Golf Club, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah. Again, a lot of people probably wouldn't think about that. If you check out one of the latest tourist sauce from No Laying Up, they actually go and visit there. And that club has got two Donald Ross courses, and it's pretty straight out. It's pretty flat land. It's nothing really exciting, but they've done a great There's just a great history about it, a nice design, easy to walk. I think it would be interesting among the ones that I haven't played before.
All right.
I mean, there's certainly ones like, you know, Harbor Town. If I was to tell people the ones they should go play, yeah, Harbor Town, go play it. I was a doubter the first time I played it. I thought, I don't really like it. It's a little tight or whatever. But, you know, and then I got yelled at by other friends. They're like, are you serious? Like, it's amazing and whatever. And then I went back again and I started to respect it more and realized, you know, you've got to play certain shots and do certain things. And it really forces your hand of how you need to play. It's not just a place you get up and kind of bang it around. So, yeah, I wouldn't say the PGA Tour always plays the best golf courses for sure, but there's definitely some intriguing ones. And definitely for me, I'd definitely try to play Detroit Country Club at some point. What is the oldest and youngest people you two have ever played golf with? There's a different one.
I actually did oldest this summer. I think I talked about it on the podcast. I played with a guy.
What time did we play? When did we play?
I played with a guy that was 96 years old at the St. Catharines Golf 96. And Country Club.
Yeah.
Yeah. He, his name is Bob Trinder. I'll remember that.
Oh, yes.
He introduced He introduced himself on the first tee, handshake, and introduced himself in the same word for word on the first screen. Thought we were going through 51st dates there. But yeah,
he had been a member,
been a member there forever. So that's the oldest. Youngest, maybe probably like an 8-year-old or something like that at like an executive course. It's just, I don't have one that's like sticking out to me in that sense, but definitely like, you know, somewhere in that like 8 to 12 range. I'm hoping that gets the change in the next couple of years or so with my own little lad, if that's what he wants to get into. But I don't have that.
Yeah. I think the young one's easy. I mean, my own daughter played, 4 years old, and I certainly say I've played a fair bit with some younger kids just, you know, as they're developing, you're trying to get out and get to know their personalities. You're playing with their parents and stuff like that and see them, you know, more often than not, you get to see some of these kids when they're playing tournament golf, you know, 10, 11, 12 is probably more common. Don't really play with a lot of little ones, you know, maybe when you're over in, you know, some pitch and putt golf course at a resort or something like that, you might see the kids playing around or stuff like that, but it's not really, you know, not really a game that you get into or whatever. So I would just go straight with my own daughter when she started to play the game at 4. And I think we probably got on the golf course when she was 5 or something like that. So I know we played Scotland when she was 8. We played a few times over there and that was pretty fun. There was a lot of other kids that were her age that were playing there. So it was neat to see for sure. Oldest, a gentleman by the name of Phil Hardy. That was a customer at my golf store. I used to play with him a fair bit. Really neat man, had been a member at a lot of golf courses around North America, had been a caddy in the 20s and the 30s, was a good player. And he was always frustrated because, you know, he was, you know, every time when I'd play with him when he was probably 87, 88, 89, every year, you know, he'd be wondering why he is not hitting it any further. Every year he's like, if I could just hit a little bit further. And I hate to tell you, Phil, it's not happening. So, yeah. But neat to play. And, you know, that would be a great thing to be able to just play that long more than anything. So, yeah, that's it for me. All right. Last question here. First part is definitely for you and maybe the second part as well. If Stefan could caddy for anyone dead, alive, or fictional, who would it be? And do you think they would make the cut?
All right. So I'm going to actually go for each of these.
All right.
So, and I'm going to give a why. And then I'm going to, and once you know the why, I want you to decide if we're making the cut. Okay. And I take offense to that. I have made cuts before, just not on the PGA Tour level. I've only given great numbers. It's not my fault.
Have you worked out your ratio as far as cuts made?
I think PGA Tour is
for certain levels. For certain levels.
PGA Tour is zero. Canadian Tour 100%.
Ooh.
I mean, it's, who's, we're not keeping track or anything.
No, and the thing is, it's very dependent on who you're caddying for, and sometimes you caddy for a buddy that you know they're not going to make the cut. You're just kind of there for 2 days. Whereas, go ahead.
Did you see the tweet by Trevor Immelman where he said,
yes, I did. His son,
he was going to play the Masters this year. Asked his son if he'd caddy. He said, yeah, I'm good for 2 days. Just such a gutless.
Did you see how Trevor responded?
Yeah. Just put his, is Masters trophy right beside his lunch.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just golden.
Amazing.
All right. So dead, alive, and fictional is how I'm going to do it. So the player I'd want to caddy if that is dead is I'm going to go with Seve. And I think Seve, why I want to caddy for Seve is Seve. Like almost I combined Daddy and Seve there. I'm going to call him Daddy on the course.
You have to have Javier on to talk to you about that. Okay.
Yeah. So Seve, he played head games and he played games out there with people and he would say stuff and he'd be lippy and he always had something to say. And if a player always has something to say, you don't have to say anything. True. So you can just walk the fairway and just hear him speaking and go, but then the magic around the greens, you know, if you get up a bad number, he's going to get up and down from everywhere. Right. So, Seve's my dead, my alive.
Should I vote on that now?
No, we'll go through them all. And then I want you to go one for one. My alive. I want to go with Phil or Bubba. I'm undecided right now. You know what? I'm going to go with Bubba. I've done Phil. Because Phil and Seve kind of similar. They don't shut up. Great short game. So I'm going to go Bubba. I want the experience of that lefty golfer. I want to watch all those shots that he can do. You know, you're going to see every part of the golf course and you're going to see him get around it. And no other way a guy is going to do that. I'm going to already say you should just tell me where I'm missing the cut on that one because I don't know how I'm going to give him like the shots from there, but we'll let you decide from that on that one. And then my fictional one, I'm going with Kramer from Seinfeld. Nice. Kramer, he's got a talent. Kramer has talent. Yeah. He's got those new Titleists.
Right.
And he has talent, but he's in his own head. He's in his own head. So a good caddy, you know, you just got to talk him, keep him level headed, get him in there. And I think Kramer and I are set for success. So based on that, Scotty,
all right.
Who's making the cut?
So let's make it, let's figure this out though. What tournament are you caddying for? Cause this could be critical as far as what it could be, whether you could make the cut or not. So,
all right, so
give me a scenario. Who are you caddying for? Where?
Let's go with Seve. We are at the Open Championship.
All right.
Bubba, we are at the Masters.
Yeah.
And then for Kramer, we're at the New York City.
You're at Bethpage doing something.
Yeah, Bethpage Black, like the New Long Island Open Amateur, something along those lines.
All right. Seve, you're making the cut based on pure talent alone. At least he is making the cut.
saying like I don't even get a percentage on top of winning percentage.
I don't know. We'll see. Like that's an easy one. Like you said, he's going to do his own thing. He's a genius. He doesn't really need to do much more than just carry the bag. So,
I'm great at that.
You don't have to talk to him much, which is good because there's less chance of getting fired. Right.
True.
Yeah. So I think that's a go. You're good there. You probably get a win, no doubt. Cause it is Seve, of course. Bubba. Wow. That is going to be a bucking Bronco. You're going to have a fun time riding that one. I'm going to say at some point, though, you're not going to hold back and you're going to say, what the hell are you trying to do when he's eventually going to try to do a shot? You might hold back early on because you're going to like, oh, I'm going to respect him. You know, he's won a couple of Masters. You know, he's a genius.
Remember the cut at the Masters. I picked this strategically.
I know.
Not a deep cut.
I see that. It's not a deep cut, but I think he's going to get so frustrated with you because you're going to be frustrated with him that you two are just going to implode. And next thing you know, it's gone and you're kicked out of the gate and see you later because he's not staying around at all.
All right. One for one. All right.
Kramer. Wow. I'm going to say he quits, leaves you the bag. You end up playing and finishing the rest of the tournament
with a wig on
something just to fill in.
Oh, him. He's definitely withdrawing.
I think he's just losing it. You know, he's a 53rd hole withdrawal, you know, maybe earlier, maybe, I don't think he makes the cut. I think 33rd hole, he's gone. He's not going to make it to the end. He's out of there. You're going to be trying to find another bag. Yeah, that's exactly it. Because it is Kramer. So you never
know. I like that. That's good.
That's a funny
We should get you next week. Whoever asked this, I'm sure I know who it is.
Yeah.
Some real smart guy probably asked this one. Maybe we'll do a repeat with with Scotty at some point in the future.
All right, I like it. Well, that's the mailbag this week. Thanks everyone for sending in those questions. Thanks for keeping them interesting. We always like the interesting ones, the hypothetical ones. They make it fun. Obviously, we can get a lot of the same boring ones all the time. We don't need those. So yeah, keep them coming every week, and we look forward to answering them.
I like it. All right. Why don't we hit the tip of the week, Scotty, and we'll wrap it up. No guests this week. I'm sure you figured this out by now.
I hope so.
So why don't you give us a quick tip of the week? Where are we getting back to post these on the Instagram? Where are we at with that? Are you going to make the video for this one? Or
yeah, I'll work on that with this one, but it's relative to it. I might do a different variation of it, but just show you an example of what we're going to do. But it's basically, you know, a tip geared towards indoors. We really got to do that this time of year for a lot of people, even though we do have a lot of listeners that are in other places. I will say, for some reason, Kyle Peters, his podcast was really popular in Ireland. Somehow it was top 20. We were ahead of Barstool in Ireland last week.
Hey.
Yeah.
I mean, so it might be the publicity they're going through. Right,
I don't
now.
Know. Yeah, it could be it too. You never know. But anyways, a lot of people working indoors, you know, they think about things like putting, and, you know, we see a lot of people, maybe they get a putting mat and they just putt towards it, and that's about it. And that's the extent of their training that they do in the wintertime. But I would suggest that one of the most important things that you need to do is just not roll balls into holes on an artificial turf. You have to actually train a skill. And one of the skills that people have to really fine tune is their aim. We find out all the time that people just can't aim their putter face properly. And it's really critical of how you control that putter face. In fact, you know, if you've got the putter 2 degrees open at impact, you actually miss the hole from 5 feet. And people are shocked all the time when you actually set them up and line them up. They don't realize how bad their aim is. And, you know, there's a variance there. It gets higher based on the player's handicap. Even tour pros don't line up properly all the time. So you can train yourself to do that. And you need to get familiar with what the look is when you're aiming. And an easy way to do it is to pick up, first of all, a laser pointer. Real cheap, real easy to get. If you torture your cats with it, you can use the same one. You can pick it up at a hardware store, dollar store, whatever. You don't need anything super, super fancy. All you need to do, though, is be able to create a, you know, a straight line that goes back towards where you're putting, and learn to line up your putter face 90 degrees to that line and practice that over and over again so that you can get that alignment going really, really well. And I use a laser all the time. I have a little bit different one than that one, but just to get people so that they're sighted in and get a real feel for what 90 degrees to that line is. Because in fact, you know, a lot of people will make compensations in their strokes to make up for their alignment or their ability to get the face lined up. And if they could do that, they wouldn't have to do a lot of changes to their putting stroke. So easy habit to get into, something you can practice over the wintertime, fairly cheap. You know, you can go to a low priced hardware store and you can find something for $4 or $5, believe it or not, for a laser pointer. Easy to do. You can work on it anywhere in the house. You know, even your animal might want to get involved, your bat, just try to make sure it doesn't go into their eyes. But just train your aim all winter long, and you'd be surprised when the springtime comes around again, you'll have a lot easier time getting that face aligned.
I like it. We're going to be working on putting at some point this week.
Oh, yeah.
We're really focused on the full swing, but, you know, it never hurts to look at everything, right? Make sure, you know, make sure everything's dialed in. It's a full swing rebuild, not just make your swing look pretty for Instagram rebuild.
You got her.
That's it for the week, folks. I got Cameron Tringali, however I called him earlier. You got Aaron Wise in the Houston Open. I love that Aaron Wise pick. I really do, and it's really driving me nuts because that's what I would have picked afterwards. Carlos Ortiz, make a statement. He should have made a statement after his caddy didn't rate the bunker. Now he's got statements because his back's a little sore.
We should have one other mention, too. I didn't mention it in the other happenings, but the LPGA is back this week as well with the Pelican Women's Championship down in Bel Air, Florida. There's only two events left there, so that should be good to watch as well. I might actually watch even more than that than the Houston Open, really.
Oh, I'm not watching the Houston Open. I'm hoping the LPGA is on TV at some point, but we'll watch a little bit on Sunday probably before the problem is football season.
Like,
it just takes over for me, and we're deep in it, the fantasy teams. you know, it's hard. It's hard.
That's why the numbers are terrible for the tours this time of year. I mean, you know, that's why a lot of people are maybe more interested in watching some of the European tour event just because it's on early, you know, before the football.
Oh, I love watching the European tour in the morning. It's especially when we got a good course, like a one that I know, or, you know, whenever we get to open season, like when we got like the Irish Open, the Scottish Open, and those are ones where it's like, that's the best golf you're getting that week. You're not getting better golf when you go to wherever, Texas.
Yeah. Later, and we are getting down to the end too for the European tour. So we are starting to see some of the players, the better players jump over there. Obviously we mentioned Aaron Cockerell being there in Dubai this week, but you know, Tommy Fleetwood's in the field too. Paul Casey, your boy. So there's some good players as well that, you know, people might want to catch on the broadcast early on.
Tommy Fleetwood, I'm going to need a prediction. Is he in the winner's circle by this time next year?
By this time,
either tour.
Yes.
Does he hold the trophy?
Sure. Yeah, for sure. I think so.
Is it on the PGA Tour?
No.
No.
It's going to be in Europe.
I think so. I think Tommy's only, I think he gets one PGA Tour win in his career. And I think it's a major where it's like, yeah, he's got, you know, that's it. So
I could see that.
Yeah. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. All right, Scotty, let's wrap it up there. Thanks everyone for listening. You know what? Let's get some reviews going. We haven't had some reviews on there. That really helps us, people. I don't even care if you write trash podcasts, but then write it 5 stars. Just give us some reviews. It helps bump us into those categories that we can get new listeners out there, and we don't have to just pitch it to Ireland all the time, apparently. So we really appreciate it. Rate us 5 stars, leave us a review. But thank you for listening regardless. We'll see you next week.